listen to Truth Radio on satellite, you know our days are numbered. As of March 1st, you will no longer find Truth Radio on the satellite, but we'll still be here. www.truthradio.com. And by the way, those of you who do listen through the internet, it's time to refresh your favorites button or your bookmark. Make sure to go to our main webpage, www.truthradio.com. You'll notice four buttons across the page, the listen buttons, right there on the home page. Make sure your favorite is set to either the one on the far left or the one right next to it. Either the one over on the far left is called the direct feed or the one that's labeled Windows. It's important that you set up your favorites that way so that you'll still be with us as of March 1st. By the way, that direct feed is an MP3 stream. Stay with us here at www.truthradio.com.
We're going to rise with the sun in the morning. We're going to start each brand new day with a prayer. Because without the love and kindness of the Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're going to do the work our Lord must perform. And there's a job that surely needs to get done. The job of waking up the nation to the new world order. He's trying to put us under his thumb.
Welcome back, and this is the DM Broly Show. Today is my science talk day, Science 101. And I have the author of, and a renowned writer, activist, a person that everyone needs to know. He wrote a book called Angels Don't Play This Harp. Harp technology, I know you've heard me talk about here on Truth Radio on the DM Broly Show before. I had Dr. Rosalie Bartel on. I've had Loren Murray. I've had Malachi Vanunu, and we've talked about the issue of people being able to manipulate weather and storms and use it as a new type of war machine. The person, the author, Nick Baggage, he's from the Anchorage, Alaska area. He is the son of a renowned politician, a man that was fighting for civil rights, who was in a plane in the area. And when Nick was a very young lad, his plane went down. And the odd thing was that there was signals from the plane. There was, contact made to people that evidently survived what was called a crash. But later, when the search parties went out, they could find no one, nothing. And to this day, they have not found anything. Now, the interesting thing about this book, Angels Don't Play with Harp, if you go to the first few pages, it gives a timeline, a history of how basically radio frequency electromagnetic pulses began. And the thing that's astounding to me is the fact that in the 70s or 60s, there was a nuclear explosion against the Van Allen belt, and who knows what that has caused. Now, for further ado, I want to introduce my guest, my renowned guest, Dr. Nick Baggage. Nick, are you there?
I am, and thank you for that very nice introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, you're a wonderful man, and I thank you very sincerely for coming on. What happened, what do you remember of your father, his work, and I just want to give a little piece of history of what had transpired in this plane crash.
Sure. You know, it's been a number of years now, but basically it was right before Watergate. It was just 3 weeks before the second election of Richard Nixon. You know, and if people remember back then, the McGovern race was on, and it was pretty dismal for the Democrats. And so, you know, Nixon was going to be reelected. It was pretty obvious. And then right about that time, Hale Boggs, who was majority leader of the U.S. House, started to get wind of this controversy brewing in Washington, which eventually became known as the Watergate controversy. And, of course, there were a lot of other subsidiary problems besides just the Watergate break-in, and those started to emerge into the public record. And Boggs was an outspoken opponent of the FBI as well as the Nixon administration, primarily because of their violations of civil liberties. My father, Nick Begich Sr., was an activist on a number of big issues at the time. The biggest at the time was the Native Land Claims Settlement Act here in Alaska, which transferred the largest amount of wealth to indigenous Alaskans and indigenous Americans ever settled in the United States, 44 million acres and $1 billion in 1971. And that, of course, was opposed by major mineral interests and mining interests, oil and gas interests here in Alaska, because they lost the ability to get those resources through the federal government, would then have to deal with tribal governments, a much different situation here in Alaska. But nonetheless, during that time, the plane went up. Boggs and my dad were on a small Cessna, and the plane was lost and never recovered. And not until the 1990s did we actually start to find out more about the story in terms of what may have actually happened on the plane.
Now, the situation thereafter, now you're a grown up young man in Anchorage, and how did you happen to get involved from, I guess you were had a real estate background, and then you ended up now dealing with science and the issue of harp?
Well, I was involved in public education here. I was twice elected president of the Alaska Federation of Teachers. I have a doctorate in traditional and complementary medicines, and you know, my interest in the sciences basically was the health sciences, with a real interest in electrophysiology, the effect of electromagnetic fields on living organisms, and that's what really pulled me into some of the new technologies emerging with the military. With HARP, it was a very small article I read in an Australian journal that caught my eye and actually led me to really look into the story. And as I did, more was uncovered. I never envisioned really writing about it so much. You know, I'd always saw myself more as a speaker than a writer, but with the encouragement of friends, we did publish, Gene Manning and I, the first book on HARP that was of any substance, and it actually was the book Angels Don't Play This HARP, which is now in a number of different languages and has actually resulted in political action in the European Parliament as well as the Russian Duma dealing with this specific issue.
Now, how did you happen to find out that HARP existed?
Well, you know, it was, you know, you can't hide these things. They're large fields of antennas, and so, you know, generally what happens in this kind of instance is the military comes up with a story that's plausible and probably accurate as far as it goes. It just never goes quite far enough. And in this case, it was billed as a developmental prototype by the military, being run by the Geophysical Institute, a branch of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and the Office of the Navy and Air Force. And then what eventually happened is it transferred over to a number of private companies in terms of the underlying intellectual property, and then the actual project was moved over to DARPA in 2003, which actually runs the program now. And it was a precursor for missile defense, which is what we said, starting in 94, 95, and eventually, as people now generally know, is Alaska is the home of the new missile defense system, and this deals with the surveillance side of that system.
Are you saying surveillance? Can you kind of elaborate on that?
Sure. The HARP system is a pretty versatile instrument. What it's designed to do is using radio frequency energy that is focused through the array or through the field of antennas. It actually forces the energy into a relatively small area that then is projected up into the ionosphere, which starts about 30 miles above the Earth's surface. And by manipulating the ionosphere with the instrument on the ground, you can change its character for a number of different applications. And just to kind of go through those, the first and the primary was communications and surveillance, and being able to use this system for knocking out everybody else's communication that depends on a stable ionosphere for effect, you could actually carry your own communications on the same signal while disrupting everyone else's. The other thing you could do is look literally over the horizon using two instruments based in Alaska. You could look over the horizon for incoming objects, whether they be at cruise missile heights, very low to the ground, or intercontinental ballistic missile heights coming in from space, basically. You could detect those objects, and then you could sort out those objects, determine which ones carried nuclear payloads and which ones didn't, using other technology in conjunction with HAARP. And then thirdly, with enough power, you could actually affect the flight controls of those objects by creating what's called an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, or surge of energy sufficient to knock out those incoming objects. And so, you know, from missile defense perspective, you know, people can see the value of that. From other perspectives, there are significant risks associated with that. So, you know, that therein lies, of course, the problem, as well as the versatility of the instrument allows you to do a number of other things beyond just those that we've covered.
Well, I just was wondering, too, how many of these devices are worldwide? I know we have HAARP in Alaska, but there's other sites as well, not only United States sites, but elsewhere.
Yeah, actually, there's two additional sites in Alaska. There's High Pass, which is located near Fairbanks on the Poker Flats rocket range in that area of Fairbanks, Alaska. That's a national rocket range. Most people don't know it exists, but it's, you know, funded substantially out of federal funds for that purpose. The other is the Kodiak Launch Facility, which is owned by the state of Alaska, supposedly for civilian purposes, although I don't believe they've ever launched anything civilian from there. Everything has U.S. military stamped on it. And in that area, they also have an additional phased array, a smaller system. And then if you look across Canada, I'm sure Rosalie, when she was on with you, expressed her concern over the facilities being built across Canada. And then the ISICAT system in Europe exists, as well as the old Russian woodpecker systems, which are five transmitters in number. And then the newest information, and we're actually having it checked out by one of our friends who's a top flight atmospheric physicist and a specialist in this technology, there is now a kilometer square array being built in Australia, and they're saying that it's for radio telescope, but we really question that. We believe it's probably the cover story because the Australians don't have an extra $1 billion, which is the cost of that array, and a square kilometer array is more on the order of what we eventually expected to see happen here in Alaska. So we are checking that one out presently with one of the top people in the field.
Now, we're going to get ready to go to a commercial break in a few minutes. But I saw in your book a little note that was written. It was said that 1977, editorial people with the Sunday Review warned of weather warfare and
right.
called it a moral issue, saying that if the world is now in for a long spell of crippling weather, then we are fools and monsters. That is a deep statement. That means that back as far as 1977, in fact, the book even goes further back, this HAARP technology was available, and there was a fear of this.
Certainly technology that could influence weather outcomes, and using electromagnetic waves or electromagnetic means such as HAARP was exactly what they were talking about. And it might be interesting to note, in 1977 was the same year that we ratified an agreement with 60 other countries, including the former Soviet Union, where we agreed to not use geophysical manipulation, whether it be weather or earthquake generation or volcanic eruptions or tidal waves, as weapons of war. Now, that was before chemical and biological treaties and some of the other disarmament treaties, but in 1970s, it was already bad enough to really cause countries to recognize the need to really back off of that area of research, and that's what that treaty was intended to do.
Well, we're getting ready to go to commercial. Anyone calling in, 866-771-8402. We have callers already, and we have Dr. Nick Baggage, Jr. We're going to talk tomorrow to him. Be right back.
In some remote places, there's a life expectancy of more than 100 years. It's not uncommon. Not only do people in these remote regions live long lives, they also enjoy abundant health and happiness. From its discovery in the Himalayas to the present day, those who know of goat cheese berry are awed by its unmatched health-promoting powers. In fact, the people of Central Asia cherish this little berry so much that they devote 2 weeks of every year to festivals in its honor, superior to fortifying and maintaining the health of the entire body. Dr. Earl Mendel, the father of the nutritional revolution, says, as a pharmacist and nutritionist dedicated to helping others optimize their health and well-being, it's a dream come true to bring the miraculous goji to the world. I believe Himalayan goji juice has more powerful benefits on health, well-being, and anti-aging than any other product I have seen in the last 40 years. For more information, call 877-888-4777. Tell them Truth Radio sent you.
Be honest. Being out of work stinks. And it's even harder when it wasn't your choice. I know. I've been there a couple times in my life. Hello, I'm Ron Robbins with Drinker Cristo. When this happens, we start questioning our abilities, our future, even our faith. We wonder, why is God putting me through this? It's not a test. It's a preparation. As hard as it is, we must persevere. James chapter 5, verse 10. As you know, we consider blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. My friends, consider your job search as preparation for something better. Instead of being discouraged that you may be unemployed, be encouraged that God is helping you find His place for you. One way to find that place is through Inner Cristo. We're on the internet at innercristo.com. We work with hundreds of Christian organizations looking for someone just like you. That's innercristo.com. Inner Cristo, a Christian ministry.
We're going to rise with the sun in the morning. We're going to start each brighter day with a prayer. Because without the love and kindness of our Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're going to do the work our Lord puts before us. There's a job that truly needs to get done. The job of waking up the nation to the new world order, which is trying to put us under their thumb.
Hi, it's Deanne, and we're back with the Deanne Broly Show, and you can reach me on deannebroly.com now. If you want to call in, it's 866-771-8402. I have Dr. Nick Baggage, Jr. from Anchorage, Alaska. We're talking about HARP. There's some interesting segments of his book, Angels Don't Play with This HARP. Something I wanted to say within this timeline I'm looking at, and I'm going to ask him some questions about it. It says in 1975, U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson forced his Navy to release research showing that extremely low-frequency ELF transmissions can alter the blood chemistry. Then there is another little thing in here that I think is interesting. It says in 1975, again, Soviets began pulsing woodpecker, extremely low-frequency ELF waves at key brain level rhythm. 17 Eugene, Oregon, one of the locations where people were particularly affected. And then there's another little insert that's 1976. Dr. Susan Bowen and W. Ross Ailey show nervous cells affected by ELF fields. Now, because of the amounts of these towers or these HARP locations, and the various levels of sound around the world, I would imagine that this has a very horrible effect on the human body.
You know, that's exactly the concern that, that many are expressing, and including myself. And the concern is, you know, not so much the power density or the focus or concentration of the power, it's the frequency. And this is what's extremely important to note is, you know, the other side of the argument always says, well, you know, nature creates so much more energy. The difference is it's not coherent or rhythmic energy, energy that's controlled. You know, it's just the same as you can pick up static in between radio stations, which is essentially RF noise, but you don't get a nice clear signal until people have resonance between the transmitter and the receiver, where they're in harmony with one another, and the signals are recognized. And the same is true in terms of human health and physiology, whether it's at a cellular level or at an organ level. Various energy frequencies can affect of the various organs of the body. In the case of the brain, energy levels as little as 1/50th of what the Earth naturally produces are sufficient to change brain chemistry. And to put that in perspective, in the radio frequency range alone, we have 200 million times more artificially created energy around us than what nature creates, yet the brain can pick out these very light energy frequencies out of the mix and actually respond to them when the signals are coherent and within very specific window frequencies where you get that dial-up effect where you have that resonance happen.
Now, what is in your opinion? I had Dr. Rosalie on, and I had talked to her, and I also talked to Loren Murray. It was my particular conclusion, and I'm trying to get a basically idea from others that because there was a number of earthquakes in Indonesia around the same time that registered between 5 to 6 on a Richter scale for a number of years, if HARP was used, it could have increased the frequency of the problem with the earthquake, thus caused the tsunami to be. And I was wondering, in your opinion, could something like HARP been used to create the tsunami? And looking at the situation that just happened in Iran, what is your opinion of that?
Yeah, you know, actually, you know, could it happen? The answer is yes. In fact, I'll quote the former Secretary of Defense, William Cullen, and this is what he said back in 1997 when he was lecturing on weapons, on international terrorism, interestingly enough, and weapons of mass destruction. This is way before 9/11. And what the Secretary of Defense said in the DOD news briefing is this. He said, others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter climates, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves, unquote. And, you know, to hear that from the Secretary of Defense while he's in office should send a signal to everyone that this technology is much more widespread and is not just residing with sophisticated scientific communities within the larger governments of the world. You know, we quote that in the book Earth Rising, the Revolution as one of 650 sources that we cite to show how technology is impacting us today and how it's evolved and how very credibly these kinds of threats are taken by the absolute leaders in national defense within the United States and elsewhere.
And how about the fact as well, the people I have had on my show recently, we were talking about dirty pollution, which is coming from electricity that's coming off of the regular wires in your home. That coupled with all this other stuff, my God, we are under, I would say, attack and not know it.
Well, you know, the idea of electro-smog, which is what you're referring to, and I didn't coin that phrase. That phrase, actually, the first time I saw it was in a publication issued called Electro-Smog, a Phantom Risk? And it was by Swiss Reinsurance, or Swiss Re as they're known, which is the Swiss Reinsurance Company is based in Zurich, Switzerland, and they're one of the advisory groups for those that are dealing with risk and insurance and telling the industry essentially what to write risks for and what to avoid. And what they say relative to this particular risk is they say, and I quote, in the worst case, the insurance industry would be confronted with claims amounting to some billions of dollars. The very existence of liability insurers is threatened, and this is no phantom risk. Talking about electrosmog, they're saying to companies, do not underwrite any of those risks. Even Lloyd's of London won't write those risks because the potential that bringing down the insurance industry is so great. Now, they don't hold to the scientific standard, in other words, where there's absolute proof and repeat after repeat experiment. The way the insurance industry works is the way most of us work, is when enough scientific evidence comes forward, they exercise what's called the precautionary principle, widely applied in Europe in public policy, not applied in the United States at all, that says when you got enough evidence, you start to warn the public and you back off. And the insurance industry has already backed off of this one completely, yet the average citizen is subjected to electromagnetic fields that, in my opinion and the opinion of many others now borne out by research, could be quite damaging, particularly when combined with some of the chemicals and chemical compounds that are now rampant within our environment.
Now, I want to mention briefly before we take our first caller, I wanted to ask you about this thing with these beach whales and dolphins all over the place. You had mentioned earlier in the conversation that they are building a HAARP substation in the area of Australia. And an interesting fact was just a few days prior to the tsunami, there were a number of beach whales and dolphins found on the shoreline. And it's been commonplace all over the place. And I saw on the Discovery Channel that a number of dolphins are acting erratic. They're killing their own fellow dolphins, not eating them, but I'm just saying, just murdering them, bludgeoning them to death. Now, is it these electrical pulses that are causing these fishes to, you know, go haywire, would you say?
Actually, we looked at this issue, and we covered it in our second book in the Earth Rising series, Earth Rising Through to the Betrayal of Science, Society, and the Soul. And what we found was that the U.S. Navy is utilizing a new low-frequency sonar, although the mid-range sonars that are widely deployed already in the seas have been associated with these beachings in the Mediterranean, in the United States, in the Bahamas, and elsewhere. The thing about the active sonars is they actually kick out a sound signal that operates much differently than sound in air. Sound in the air, when it strikes the human body or tissue, 99.97% of the energy is bounced off or reflected away. In the case of the oceans, when sound transits the oceans and strikes tissue, whether it's a marine mammal or a human being, 100% of the energy transfers into the tissue until it strikes either lung cavities, nasal passages, or in the case of many fish species, just gases within the gut. And at that point, the energy is released explosively, causing hemorrhaging that when you look at the animals and you dissect them, you actually looks like what you would get in a human being with the bends when they surface too fast and they have those big changes of pressure. This is exact same effect. And they've been testing these low-frequency sonars at 1/5,000th of the level that eventually will be deployed. They were subject to a lawsuit by the environmental community. The Navy was. The Navy lost the suit, but the settlement resulted in the Navy getting permission to continue to use this technology in Southeast Asia, which includes the area that just underwent this huge tsunami, as well as to continue testing this technology and using this technology in wartime, which I think that's what time it is right now, according to at least our administration in this country. So when you look at this technology, it's a little bit different than HAARP, but again, it's energy effect that has never before been used in the seas at these volumes. And these are sort of the initiatives that are moving forward, all surround energy as the basic weapon of choice, but deployed in very different ways. One using radio frequency, one using sound or acoustic energy, and many other technologies are emerging that essentially energy is the weapon, and whether defensive or offensively being applied. And that's the area of technologies that we've covered over the last, probably the last 10 years.
And what about radiation from these?
This is much different. You know, you're not talking about radiation in the sense of what you get from a nuclear explosion. In fact, one of the reasons that this technology is preferred is because you can create incredible effects without the radiation of a fallout that you get with nuclear devices. For instance, electromagnetic pulse, this idea of surging energy, you know, back in the 60s, people remember hearing stories of if they ever did a nuclear blast above the United States, they could wipe out all of our solid-state electronics and all of our, now all of our integrated circuits and, circuits and everything else. The problem is the fallout. With EMP devices or the technology, applying that technology and applying those same principles without a nuclear explosion, you can have the same effect, whether it's a small scale targeting a car for law enforcement to knock out its electronics so the car stops operating, or something much larger that works on a hemispheric scale, such as a large HARP type array for doing exactly the same kind of thing.
I'm going to open up the line, if you don't mind, to our listeners, if you don't
sure.
mind. I don't know how many are on there because I had technical difficulties earlier. Do I have any listeners there?
I'm here.
Hi. Would you like to ask a question?
Yes. I guess this is a logical transition from what you're saying, going to 911, and whether or not that was a preventable situation or whether it was a planned situation. Based upon what you said, it sounds like it was easily preventable.
It should have been preventable. You know, this is, again, I was in a major conference in Switzerland a year or two ago where a lot of experts dealing with 9/11 were brought together. And, you know, the idea that that we're that incompetent that we can't manage the affairs of, of airline flights around the country should be very disturbing to folks. If that was an accident, then it was the biggest work of incompetence that anybody could imagine, you know, with airplanes that are monitored both by computer and by controllers, it's pretty ridiculous what happened there. The idea that we could have taken the aircraft down is certainly there, but again, you know, not having the protocols in place to do that, you know, and those are big decisions. I mean, you're deciding which Americans live and die and in those scenarios, and I think that's 9/11 certainly made the military and planners figure out contingencies so they would make that decision in the future. But I think there was just a lot of incompetence, both from the Federal Bureau of Investigation from the very beginning, the same kind of incompetence that existed when my father's plane went down. The FBI has not changed. They just changed players, switched tasks, give it new names, make people have a feel-good feeling. But, you know, these problems are not going to go away. And regardless of whether it was preventable or not, it has created a total change in the character of the country, and that's where I don't care how many countries we crush, we lose the war if we lose our civil liberties in the process, and that's what's at stake right now.
I'm still here too, Deanne. I just wanted to let the other caller call in because I'm always here.
Oh, okay. Well,
but I did have a question that I could answer her.
Okay, well, the thing is, if you could hold a minute, because
sure,
we're
going to
go to a commercial soon. Is there a possibility, Nick, I just want to ask a question. Because of the amounts of all this technology and all these different levels of electromagnetic pulses and waves and all this sound that we have and some of the things I read in your book, it's not something that I can conclude and state that maybe they have also the technology to remote pilot planes and divert things like this, you know?
Sure. The fact is, with modern aircraft today and the sophistication of our governments, you can override the flight controls and either cause them to crash immediately, or you can override the flight controls in some cases, perhaps even taking control of the aircraft. And this is something that was actually written up in a publication by the U.S. Army War College called The Revolution of Military Affairs and Conflicts Short of War from 1989. And in that instance, the idea was to override the circuits causing aircraft to crash. And then there was this big constitutional argument they were making about, you know, whether we could do this, you know, outside of a war environment, for instance, with drug traffickers or terrorists. And the conclusion then was, well, if we do it outside the United States, you know, we can forget about the juries and the judges and those little inconveniences from the military's perspective and do this anyway. And I strongly disagreed with that in our earlier publications on the basis that mistakes would be made. And if people have followed the news, one of those mistakes was made in Peru when a missionary and his child was shot down by bad intelligence from the United States.
Well, we're going to return again with Nick, and we're also going to take callers, so stay tuned.
Truth Radio listener in Minnesota has shared with us a CD of a British documentary exposing the American military for forcing our military pilots to take amphetamines in order to enhance their performance when they're doing flight missions. Fighter pilots on speed, that's what this CD is all about. I'll send you this DVD. And you can contribute anything you want for it. The only thing I ask is that you pledge that you will share it with your friends and neighbors. Call in a dozen neighbors and ask them to deal with you. This is something the American public simply doesn't know. We have to spread the word. It's an important DVD. Please, let me send it to you. I'm going to send you a bonus presentation as well if you order it. Send us a contribution of any size, P.O. Box 344, Nuomo, California, 93444.
I think God uses our kids to get our attention.
We'll pull us together. Here's Dennis Rainey.
Psalm 127:1 says, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor for vain building. But every once in a while, when things are going along smoothly, you know, I start to feel like maybe I got this parenting thing right. Well, that's when God will use one of my kids to get our attention. All of a sudden, Barbara and I will start praying what I call the prayer of a helpless parent. Lord, help. God reminds us again that we need Him to be in charge, builder of our family. Do your children send you to your knees? That's a great place for you to be. Today, pray to God for help in building your home. First, pray for your marriage. Ask Him to keep your marriage holy and pure. Ask Him for wisdom and for a strong commitment to one another. Then pray for your children. Plead with Him to build convictions where you can. God loves the prayer of the helpless parent.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
We're going to rise up with the sun in the morning. We're going to start each brand new day with a prayer. Because without the love and kindness of the Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're gonna do the work our Lord puts before us. And there's a job that surely needs to get done. Job of waking up the nation to the new world order, which is trying to put us under its thumb.
Hi, welcome back, and it's Deanne with the Burley Show, and we have Dr. Nick Bajich. I hope you will consider coming back again, because I think you are wonderful, and I think what we're reporting here needs to be talked about more. Nick, can you give the listeners a website and how they can contact you,
sure,
information on this book and other books that you have currently out?
You bet. You can reach us through earthpulse.com, earthpulse.com, or you can call us internationally. You can use 1-907-249-9111. Again, that's 907-249-9111, and we'll be happy to send out a catalog and information on our publications.
Now, the other thing on the back of this book, I recommend people to get this. This is really, when I opened the first few pages, I was just flabbergasted. In the back it says, Project Censored. It says a prestigious panel of journalists judged TARP to be in the top 10 underreported stories of the 1990s. And then it also talks about disrupting of the human mental process. jamming all global communications, changing weather patterns over large areas, interfering with wildlife migration and patterns. I mean, this is a huge impact on everything, I would say.
You know, that story from Project Censored, that was going back to the mid-90s. And, you know, it's taken us a long time to get the issue out, but we've been, you know, persistent at it. We finally got a resolution in 1999 out of the European Parliament, and then in 2002, the Russian Duma acted on this technology as well. And, you know, that particular panel that looked at this included, you know, people like Walter Cronkite looking at the stories of the day, and this was one of those. Our book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, was considered one of the 10 most underreported and important books of that year. You know, and when you look at technology, I think it goes well beyond HARP. I mean, HARP allowed us to really take the issues of technology forward, and since that time, we've reported on issues of personal privacy, cell phone safety, lots of issues that we have not been able to cover today, and I'd be glad to be back with you again in the future. And you know, these are issues we follow regularly. We add probably 300 to 400 documents to our files every month. So we're pretty much on top of what's happening technologically, and the impacts of those technologies on all of us is what we really focused our attention on, so we can make good, informed decisions within this democratic republic and other republics and democracies around the world.
And your co-author, Ms. Manning, tell me a little about her.
Jean has been a journalist for well over 30 years. She's spent her entire career in journalism. She wrote the book The Coming Energy Revolution, which unfortunately is now out of print, but was on alternate energies, not the standard solar or hydro, but dealing with the more exotic stuff that people read about. And Jean was following the same story. We met as a result of an article that I had written right after we started following the story. And we agreed to collaborate first on an article, and it became clear to us that there was just too much information. So we worked together on this book, and she sort of smoothed out what she called bureaucrat ease. I've worked around government too long to communicate a message coherently. And you know, that was a really important step for me because it really put us together in a way that we could write together and I could take advantage of her knowledge of journalism and begin to put that more into my writing, so it was a little more down-to-earth and comprehensible. And that's been really the mission has been to do exactly that, is to take complex ideas, relying heavily on specialists in various areas of science, to bring it down to plain language so we as the real policymakers, average citizens, could be informed on these very important subjects and not be afraid of them.
And she also wrote a little a bit on the exopolitics level dealing with Alfred Weber. He's been on my show quite a bit. And all of these areas are very important. And what I'm going to do is go back to the listeners and that are online that might have questions, because I think you know, we need to dialogue with the community more to let them be aware and answer their questions more on these topics.
Great.
Let me see who is out there. Like I said, I don't know who's online right now. How many callers do I have?
There's me.
Okay.
And is the other lady on the line?
Yeah, there's two of you?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to explain one thing for the lady about 9/11. The cameras were gone after the two towers went down, but there was somebody who was still taking pictures of what was going on, taking the film. And the third tower was taken down. A guy by the name of Silverstein, who, by the way, I think he insured it for two or three times the original value, and he bought it a few months before all this happened, and he got rid of the staff, all the people who was his original, who were there for security, and he put his own people in. And basically, what happened was the third tower was taken down, and they call that pulling. And when Silverstein said we'd had such a horrible loss of life, to pull the third tower. Well, the only way a tower can implode upon itself is if there are charges put in certain areas. And when they took this tower out,
It looked just like the other two towers that went down. Why were there charges in that building in the first place that they could do something like that?
Well, you know what? We're going to go to talk about that at another
time. No, I just wanted to tell that nice lady that one of the reasons that we didn't understand is they left a lot of blanks in. But one thing also is true. One plane, two planes, three planes could have hit the tower, and it didn't necessarily have to go down because they were built by these architects, kind of like your screen door at home. You could poke a hole in it with a pencil, but the whole screen won't go down. It won't go out. So basically, that's all I wanted to tell that nice lady.
Okay, and the nice lady, I want to ask you, do you have any other questions for Nick?
Well, one I did, and this one is, you and I both can understand that something could be made to cause weather. And if that's the case, they would use that, and they would never be detected by anything that was wrong, considering how much it would have taken to bomb that area to do the same damage and how long it would have taken.
Sure. And, you know, and I think this is, again, the idea of covert wars, which come up in all the military documents surrounding these kinds of topics, particularly weather modification. The idea of being able to wage a war undetected for potentially years, crushing a country's ability, for instance, to produce food, like what's happened in Korea. You know, is it plausible that we could be doing that? Absolutely yes. Is it conceivable that our government would do that? Absolutely yes. Are they doing it right now? That we do not know without independent
I have one more thing to add to that. If that can happen somewhere else, people have to understand it can happen here.
Sure. In fact, there was a Russian company that was offering on a for a fee to actually do that in South Texas during a drought a couple of years ago. I was contacted by one of the papers down in Dallas-Fort Worth. And, you know, the fact is the companies can do that privately as well as governments. The problem is you can't predict the downstream effects. So you go into one area, you solve maybe one problem for the immediate region, but then you've got problems scattered across the world. And the problem with all of this is weather doesn't respect political boundaries, which are artificially drawn on a map. It goes the way the Earth dictates. And this is where even on any basis, you cannot properly model the planet to interfere with weather in one place. You create what's called in physics the butterfly effect, where a small amount of change creates huge changes elsewhere that are unpredictable and quite dangerous.
But I had another thing what I was trying to say. What I was saying is if they can create it somewhere else and do what they did with the tsunami, with the earthquake, people have to understand in this country that they could do it to us. I'm not talking about the after effects everywhere else. That is automatic. You have to pay the price for whatever you do in the electromagnetic field of the senses. You know, you have no choice. You reverberate and continue to go in the direction, whether it be good or evil, is basically up to us.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that's the underlying theme in all of this is, you know, it's like the mail truck, you know, it can be used to deliver your mail or someone can run you over with it. But it's on the operator.
I would like the lady, too, that's on the line to ask another question if she has. And I want to finish up because we're getting close to the end of the program. Do you have another question?
Yes, I do. It's on the line of the one I asked first. I have touched on it, and let me just talk about some of the things that are happening that are rather strange. For instance, why is all of a sudden people in this country having problems with their memory? Well, we talked about Alzheimer's, and we talked about senility or whatever, but now it doesn't matter what your age. Most people I know are complaining about the same thing. They can't remember anything, and I'm not going to use the word they use.
There may be some explanations for that. One of them that shows up in a study that was done on cell phones, actually, in Europe involving 15,000 people, finding that people using phones over an hour a day experienced problems with memory, along with a lot of other issues, but memory was one of them. If you look at the wireless world that's evolving around us, it's putting a lot more energy around us. The idea that these energies are harmless is false. The question is, what effects
are able to be drawn from these particular fields. And memory is one of them that shows up in cell phones, which now are used by a major segment of the population, although there's lots of other issues. Even those that don't use cell phones, the towers themselves produce energy that has some of these very same effects being reported now in some of the studies coming out of Europe.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up the towers and the cell phones, because we're looking at the phenomenon was happening in our public schools. And it looks as if every child is having difficulty learning, where before that was quite the opposite.
Right, and this again.
Happening, I could go on with all the strange things, but I guess my underlying question is, do you believe that certain administrations would use these technologies against the people of this country?
Well, let me paraphrase what Zbigniew Brzezinski said in a book called Between Two Ages, and he was this was 73, and later he became National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter when he was president. And what he said was, no matter who was in power, the temptation to use these technologies to further their political ends, whether liberal or conservative, would probably yield to good sense. In other words, yeah, I think no matter who's in power, the idea that these technologies can be used to further somebody's ideology, the answer is yes. The biggest think tankers in the world dealing with political issues agree with that and have put that forward well in advance of these technologies emerging, although in the same book, Zbigniew Brzezinski projects and predicts that these technologies that we're talking about would in fact emerge right around this time, and he's been right on schedule. If you read that book, it's an excellent book. You could read it as a history today of what actually happened from the time it was printed to the time we are today, over 30 years later.
Thank you.
Now, I just want to ask another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to find out as well, what would you say was the horror or the worst cause with these explosions to the Van Allen belt? How bad did that impact on the Earth?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that people don't recognize. Is, you know, the idea that exploding nuclear devices actually create huge problems that we see even today persist within our environment. I think that's really, the early experiments prove that. That's why atmospheric testing was eventually banned.
Well, thank you, Nick, for coming on. And that was Dr. Nick Barrett from Anchorage, Alaska. Angels Don't Play That Harp. Get his book. Contact us. Bye.